Before I read the gospel, I'd like to share an experience of one of my pastor friends. He has a 5-year-old daughter, and she noticed that at every Sunday service, before he got up to preach, he would find himself in prayer. And so after church one Sunday, she asked him, what do you do while you're there with your head down and your eyes closed? And he says, I always ask God, I pray to God and ask that I will have the grace to give a really, really good sermon for the people. And she responded, why doesn't he answer your prayer? Which is why today, in that spirit, after the gospel reading this morning, Brian is going to give us a really good sermon. Not to put you on the spot. No. No pressure. This gospel passage is a very famous one. Certainly the images you've already caught in the prayers. This is from chapter 15 of John's gospel. Jesus says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear even more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me you can do nothing. Whoever does not abide in me is thrown away like a branch and withers. Such branches are gathered and thrown into the fire and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask for whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples. And as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in that love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. And I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that joy may be complete. The Gospel of the Lord.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so very, very much for opening your doors and having me back amongst you this morning. It's a real pleasure and a privilege to be here. And when I am here, and when we talk about coming back to First Church Bethlehem and sharing an update on the work of Simply Smiles, it always brings me back to center, back to the core, back to the genesis of what led me, the steps that led me to be in front of you on a Sunday morning today. And as I drive these roads to get here, these familiar roads, those feelings bubble to the surface. And I'm incredibly grateful to have the opportunity once a year or once every other year, whatever it may be, to come back to this incredible center. And it is an incredible center here at First Church to talk with you a little bit about what you have done. And that's the thesis, really, what you have done. Some of you, surely, the familiar faces especially, have heard parts of this story before, so I apologize for the repetition, but I wanted to tell you briefly that Genesis story of Simply Smiles. In 2002, I was an injured professional mountain climber. Sentence that I say a lot and kind of don't believe any longer, but it is true. That did happen. And I hatched a plan to go to Mexico to recuperate. I went to Mexico and I traveled Mexico for several months. I started in the border of Texas in the north and worked my way down through the mountains. And honestly, I wanted to recuperate. I wanted to be alone. I wanted to read books. I just wanted to be there. And I was sitting on a wall in a small Mexican town. And a woman walked up to me, an American woman, and I remember thinking in my head, oh no, I don't want to talk to anybody, especially not some tourist. I just want to sit on this wall and read my book. Well, the woman's name was BJ Bernstein, and she came up to me, and she was very, very nice, and we spoke, and we had dinner, and went our ways, and the next day we got together to go look at some ruins, and we spent a few days together and went our separate ways. A number of weeks later, I was in the southern tip of Mexico. I had continued traveling, and I had stumbled upon the Casa Hogar Benito Juarez orphanage. I knocked on the door. A woman answered, and I said, my name is Brian. Would you like a volunteer for a day or so? She said, yes. She gave me the corner of a storeroom filled with beans to sleep in. And I woke up the next morning, my first morning at the orphanage, and I met the 80-plus children who called that orphanage their home. I didn't speak much Spanish. I honestly am not even sure how I had gotten to that point in Mexico without speaking much Spanish. But I was out in this courtyard, and there were 80-plus children. And they're all speaking rapid-fire Spanish and surely asking me, who are you, tall white guy in our soccer court? And so I did my thing for a few minutes with those kids, and I noticed on the periphery, over on the edge of all this commotion of these children, was a boy in a wheelchair. And I worked my way over to that boy, and I looked at him, and I did speak a little Spanish, kind of like high school Spanish 1 kind of thing. And I said, you know, hi, what's your name? And he looked at me, and he said his name was Ricardo. I didn't speak Spanish. He didn't speak much. And we bonded in that moment. I ended up spending 2 months at the orphanage, working with the children and caring for Ricardo, because there was nobody but me who was strong enough to lift him out of his wheelchair and change his diapers, and to care for him. I realized in those moments that while I was there, at an orphanage, foot to ground, with my own hands, I could do something. And that was an incredible feeling. Eventually, I had to come back. There was no more money, there was no more time, life. I came back to Connecticut, and that feeling of confidence was gone. Because here I was now in this world, with a deep DNA, heart connection to that place, that orphanage in that world. And in this world, I had no confidence, no knowledge, no ability, I believed, to do anything about that situation that I had just left. I mentioned this to my mother, and I mentioned it to my grandmother. And my grandmother, always being the schemer, she said, well, why don't you come to the church in Bethlehem and speak? So what am I going to speak about? And I believe I borrowed Barbara's slide projector, which I never returned. And, okay, because I think I might have thrown it away. And I came, and in that hall, 2 weeks after returning from that orphanage for the first time, I tried to share slides with you. I tried to share slides with you of what I had experienced at that orphanage in the hopes that you'd respond. And you did. We passed the basket, we collected money, and I started to get an energy and a knowledge and a thought that maybe something could happen. Maybe we could together make a change in our world, beginning with that orphanage. And so feeling pretty good, I went to dinner at my grandmother's house down the road, Lorraine's house, and we had beef stew. And she had an envelope. She said, Brian, I have this envelope from you. It's from Frank and Gladys Nichols. Now, some of you may have heard this part of this story, and even if you have, I want to tell it again. I opened up the envelope, and inside was a check made out to me for $5,000. And there was a note. And I believe Frank was a mason. Is that correct? A mason? Yeah? Or did masonry work? And there was a note, and it said, Brian, on Saturday, a debt was paid to me. The day before. A debt that I never thought I would see paid. And when I heard your slide presentation about Ricardo and those children at the orphanage, I wanted to sign this check over to you. And he gave me that check for the children at the orphanage. And it was in that moment that everything changed. I got home, went back home to my little apartment in Naugatuck, and the next morning, my phone rang, and it was BJ. That woman who walked up to me in that Mexican village, and she said, Brian, what's going on? And I said, well, you're not going to believe this, but I have like $6,000 now, and I want to give it to the orphanage. And she said, well, where's the money? And I said, well, in my bank account. And she said, well, you can't do that. I said, well, I know, but I mean, I'm not going to spend it. I'm going to give it to the orphanage. And she goes, no, you can't. And she starts talking about taxes and stuff, and my eyes glazed over. And she flew me on her dime that week to Atlanta, where I found out that she was a lawyer. On her dime, she flew me down there, and she said, on the plane, come up with a name for your charity organization and a mission statement and five people to be on a board of directors. And so I had a little pad, and on the plane, I came up with the name Simply Smiles. I came up with the mission statement, Bright Futures for Impoverished Children, and I asked my dad and my friends to be on our board of directors, and Simply Smiles was formed. I feel a deep, formative connection to this church. I attended family weddings here. My grandmother sang in the choir. I eulogized both of my grandparents from this pulpit. Frank and Gladys and this congregation, every single one of you, current and past, this congregation gave me the confidence and the ability to start Simply Smiles. Then you nurtured the seed that you planted. You brought the first volunteer group we ever had. First volunteer group we ever had came from this church and came with us down to Mexico to work. We've since had 3,000 people follow the path that you blazed to come work with us. Mark Trister, your former minister, got us into Choate, opened doors for us that we never imagined could be possible. The church has continued to support us. Vince and Jane McDermott sponsored a young man named Evaristo. Vince got on a plane, flew down to the orphanage to meet Evaristo. I made a call yesterday when I knew I was coming here to follow up a little bit on Evaristo. Because of that support from Vince and Jane and from this church, Evaristo went to college, and he went back to the village where he was born to be a teacher, to teach the next generation of children. While we were down in Mexico forming that sponsorship program, it's a very interesting story I wanted to share with you, which I rarely think of, but it was flooding my head this week as I was preparing to be with you. We were forming that sponsorship program, and we decided we'd have kids 16 and under on the program, and we'd bring their pictures back and share them with you. Well, there was this one girl named Gabriela Chavez Hernandez at the orphanage, and I didn't put her on the program because I thought she was 20. She was 12. She was in charge of a room of girls, making sure that they brushed their teeth, washed their clothes, did their homework. Two nights a week, 12 years old, she made dinner for the entire orphanage. My Spanish still wasn't great at the beginning, and I guess it just slipped through the cracks. I thought she was 20. We got to know Gabby very, very well, my wife Kristen and I, and she's an incredible child who chose to leave her village so that she could be educated, because in her village there were no schools. In 2 weeks, Gabby, who lives with my wife Kristen and I now in Connecticut, Gabby will graduate from Sacred Heart University with a degree in business administration after receiving a scholarship from Simply Smiles to come to the United States and go to school. We just struck a deal with Fairfield University, and we chose the first child. Her name is Wambli. She's a junior living in a FEMA trailer on an Indian reservation in South Dakota. She's a junior in high school, and she's going to be our first student to attend Fairfield University on a full-ride college scholarship. This week, I went up to the Berkshire School in Massachusetts, where we're working to bring a young girl, a fifth grader, from the reservation named Juanita, to attend high school at the Berkshire School so that she can have the bright future that she deserves. These are the waves. These are massive waves that began as ripples, and they began as ripples from these pews. Evaristo, Gabby, Wambli, Juanita, these are the great leaders of tomorrow who will rise up from places in this world of unspeakable, unspeakable poverty. They are our Mandelas. They are our Martin Luther Kings. They are this generation's crazy horses. They are the change makers. Simply Smiles each day is tackling some of the most entrenched, difficult, impossible poverty and injustice in our world. Gabby, over her spring break, flew to Mexico, drove 8 hours into the jungle to literally pluck children from bamboo huts to come live at our new orphanage that she's going to run once she graduates college in 2 weeks, bringing them to our facility and literally saving their lives. I don't know if you saw the New York Times article that was on the front page of the paper on Friday about the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, where we lost 9 children to suicide, all under the age of 13, 9 children since December. Thank you. Thank you to each and every one of you for putting us in the position to fight this fight. Chief Tecumseh once said, "A twig alone can be broken in two, but in a bundle, they can never be broken." We need the magic of this church again. We need a call to action from you again. So let's throw our hats over the walls starting this Sunday. Let's do something new, something exciting, something special. Let's travel again to Mexico or the reservation. Let's get Heifer Project connected to the people in South Dakota, to the people in Mexico. Let's see what happens when you and I, Simply Smiles in this church, the people of Mexico, the people of the reservation, let's see what happens when we create another ripple from these pews. Thank you, and amen.